Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, as you know, on a Wednesday, we have Ntabiseng Dubazana. We're so sorry we're late. Hello.
Hello, no problem.
Okay, it's always lovely having you. How are you?
I'm good, tired, but how are you? So,
isn't everybody tired at
yes,
the time of the year?
Yes.
So you've got some interesting cases that you wanted us to have a look at today.
Yes, so the one I think is quite interesting before we go into the technical issues of court process. So parents decided to sue their gynecologist. So parents about 5-6 years ago, they went after having their then assumed last born child, and the agreement or the contract between them and gynecologist was that they're going to sterilize mom to ensure that, nope, we're not going to have any more children. Mm-hmm. And that's that.
Make sure it doesn't happen.
Exactly. And then, fast forward 5-6 years later, they then sue. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was 2021, so it's about four years ago, 3 years ago. They institute legal proceedings against the gynecologist for breach of contract, and they sue.
They fell pregnant again.
Yes.
Okay. I've seen these cases, yeah.
And
makes
then
a lot of sense.
Yes, and then they sued the gynecologist for 5 million rand, which they assumed is the
cost.
Probable cost of raising this child up until they're self-sufficient.
Yes.
Right? So the interesting
part... In fact,
part,
it's little.
How much?
No.
But 20 what? Million?
Definitely. They were being very kind.
No, they were. And it's not really the first time that courts have had to deal with this. But what I found interesting in this situation is that usually the courts kind of grapple with the moral aspect of it and the best interest of the child, whether it should be such a thing that you're burdening the gynecologist with
absolutely
such things.
If and you know, if he tells you 100% I'm going to make sure that you are fine, and suddenly you are told you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Icon.
Oh, and then they also added, I think, delictual claims there because she went through depression and she was not happy about all
she's
of this.
Right.
So with all of that, the court, the doctor then replied to the summons and said, well, unfortunately for you, the time has prescribed. So you can't claim anymore.
What does that mean?
So the Prescription Act, you have 3 years, to claim for any amount of money from the moment that you became aware of it up until the 3 years.
I get I was depressed. I get the mother was depressed trying to deal with the fact, you know, it's like if someone said to me right at this moment now, I'm pregnant. Yo. I would cry. Yo, for days. It would be for months, if not for days.
But you're not going to cry the whole 9 months.
I will. So, this 3 years.
Yes.
I would be crying for 3 years. And then after that, only sue. Because I still cannot understand what's just happened.
Yeah. And that was the
In
argument.
In fact, now I'd be saying it's not me.
It's who?
It's exactly what I would be saying. I'd be saying... Me. It's not me.
Somebody else. No. It cannot be.
It cannot be. It cannot be. So I would be crying, saying, as in, Lirina.
Nanana.
Aswak.
Even with the scams
in my body,
and all.
I would say, Haswak. In my body. That's what I'd be saying. I'd be traumatized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Traumatized.
I think that's what she was going through. And they tried to bring such evidence and whatnot. But the gynecologist actually won the case.
Because he said 1%.
Prescription.
Because,
prescription. You did not bring it in time. Had you brought
only
it in.
Only because of that.
Only because of that. But for that, the court would have granted that. And it would have been very interesting.
So let's talk about the language that the doctor would have given or would have used. So if the... Because I usually hear them say 99%, whatever we're going to do here,
yes,
is 99% going to guarantee you that you are not going to fall pregnant.
Yes, yes.
Is that enough?
There's always that 1% that they rely on.
Everybody will say
yes. So that 1% they always rely on to say that, you know, we're not saying it's a guarantee. There's always God's will. That's what they always say. That is factored into that. I can only do so much. So what she was arguing in her papers was saying that she wasn't even given that there's going to be a possibility.
So the doctor did not say 99%.
That's what she's saying in her papers, and he's countering that, saying that even if I had said that, it's
science will not allow me
correct, and therefore it all boiled down to, well, it's neither here nor there, because 3 years have now passed and you didn't interrupt prescription.
Ntabiseng, would it have to be, let's just say we park the prescription time, right? Would it have to be a kind of thing where we assess whether the practitioner had bravado? In other words, I know what I'm doing, and maybe I chose him because kiskoko manu.
Yes.
Oh, kiskoko. You know, like there is no way. Everybody in this town knows, you know, I put my trust in this guy.
Yeah.
Is it that? Or in the end, that doesn't matter?
I think it is that. It's not about whether science and all of that. It is a contractual agreement at the end of the day.
That when we, you and I, spoke.
Yes.
I trusted you.
Yes.
To give me what I want.
Correct.
If I had an inkling that you are not the guy for what I want,
I would not have come
maybe
to you.
Would not have come.
Yes,
to you.
That is the test that was basically put forth there to say, this is the reason that I came here. This is what you guaranteed me, and yet here we are.
This is what this whole town says about you.
You know what I mean? So you already have a reputation that precedes you.
Mm.
And therefore, the standard of care for you when we measure you versus the other gynecologist is higher.
It's not science. It's that you have this reputation.
Yes. And as a result, why is it that when it comes to me, that this reputation now fails?
So is it the kind of thing, when we were speaking about medical negligence, and we made the point yesterday that it's not necessarily only in the public sector, private sector too.
Yes.
Is it the kind of thing that it would be deemed as negligent in the sense? In the sense that if, let's say, we speak about a loop or whatever, and something goes wrong, would we blame the practitioner, or would we just blame it on science when the loop no longer works?
So I think the same way that we would if the medical negligence happened, for example, you're getting an operation, they cut the wrong tubes, they still have to go back and assess your body first and see how it is that it could have been that your intestines were cut during an operation, which then therefore led to your blood getting contaminated and then bringing you here. We would have to go back to how it was inserted. What was the protocol that was done? Did your body conform to what it is that is required? Because remember, as women, we don't respond the same to what are they called? Preventative measures for pregnancy. So were those risks assessed with you and all of that? And the choice to put in the loop, was it in accordance to what your body would accommodate?
So legally, would it be called negligence?
I don't think so, because negligence usually is because a medical condition is coming as a result of a doctor having been negligent. So this one would be a contractual fault. In other words, you violated the terms and conditions of the contract that you and I had when I came to you to say, tie my tubes.
And maybe I wanted you to advise me better.
Yes.
And say, no, well, actually for you, madam, you want to lose 20 kilograms. Therefore, when you lose that weight, you are likely to loosen up whatever.
Correct.
And things may not work.
Yes, because I'm coming to you as a specialist. So you need to advise me what would work better for me.
It'll be interesting to open the lines. 0860009594. The number of people who found themselves, and you know the thing about this case, is that it has the potential, and I'm sure many people have gone through this, of shame.
Yes.
And embarrassment and guilt. Because it's almost like you're saying you don't want a child now that's here. And you are now forced to feel like you don't have the resentment of not having the child, and yet you do have the resentment of having the child.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so people don't necessarily speak up to say, you know, actually,
I didn't want.
I was duped.
Yes.
I thought I took the pills and whatever the case may be, and here I am pregnant, I'm upset.
Mm.
So people are not necessarily going to make noise about it because... just be happy.
Yes, and that's the thing. Be happy.
Mm.
It's a blessing. It's all of this, but for you,
you are so ungrateful.
Yes.
A child is a gift.
Mm. Mm. So really, now I'm here saying, but I can't even afford this child. And then the next thing is that why wait a dito?
How are they one?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're going to shame you for engaging in intercourse. And then, if not about Lebana, why did you continue doing this, knowing there's a possibility?
Mm.
But forgetting or not even knowing that there was this thing that you had done to plan your life to ensure that this doesn't happen.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it happened. And this was not part of your trajectory of life.
Mm. Let me go to Jabu in Kempton Park. Hello, Jabu.
Yes, evening. How are you?
It's good. Good. How are you, Bud?
I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead, Jabu.
Evening, Mentor.
Good evening, Dede.
I needed to ask, with relation to your statement on the prescribed method.
Yes.
Does the prescription work or matter based on when you instituted the claim or the litigation, or does it work on the time frame that even if I had to claim from you, now in 2024, the court will not hear or give attention to my Simon since 2029, since 3 years would have lapsed.
Yes.
My question and concern is, does it have to do with when did I notify you on my intention to claim, or does it work on the time frame with respect to the 3 years?
It works on the time frame of when the incident occurred, not even when you drafted the papers. So if the incident occurred, let's say for argument's sake, in 2022, and you're only instituting the action now, right, which is like about a year and a half, 2 years into it, you have interrupted prescription. So the 3 years of you keeping quiet from the date that the money was due. Let's say I was supposed to pay you back your 50,000 rand January 2022, but I failed to do so, and you failed to remind me, you failed to send me a letter of demand, all of those things. But then you remembered in 2024, oh no man, Tabisong owes me, and then you send me a letter of demand. Then it interrupts prescription, so it starts afresh.
Mm.
From the moment you send me that LOD, we start counting 3 years from scratch at that time. But if you go from 2022 to 2026 without saying anything, an LOD, an email, an SMS, whatever, you don't do anything, by the time you actually issue out summons to me in 2026, my counter is going to be prescription.
Because where were you all along?
You know? So I always advise that even if you're not in a position to get an attorney at that particular time, send emails, send messages, send whatever, because it interrupts prescription. So you keep starting from scratch and counting all over again every time you send that reminder. I hope I answered you properly.
Does it make sense?
Loud and clear. Actually, the angle that I was concerned about was the interruption of prescription.
But okay.
I guess in this result, to our host, remember those who are religious, but not the Virgin Mary, so we'll say congratulations to you. Thank you.
Hi, Manjabu.
Oh, wow.
Let's take a quick break. Listen, you're very welcome to call for any other issue, right? So we were picking up. We've got another story that we want to share with you, but you're very welcome to call and type saying for any other legal matter. 086-00-00959. You can also send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Thanks so much for staying with us. Okay, so Ntabi Singh is here, 086-00-00959. The voice notes on 063-688-0959. Really anything legal, any legal matter. If you have a problem, please call us and ask the question. We have case two.
So with case two, I found it quite important because we talk about really what acts say in this way and that. We never really talk about court process.
Yes.
What happens in court, what is
once
expected.
Once that has happened.
Yes. Once you're either going for your civil case, your criminal case, whatever the case may be. So this particular case was an appeal from a criminal court wherein the accused persons are appealing both their conviction and sentence. The interesting part is that the accused persons are white people and they were Afrikaner speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge who is hearing the appeal from the lower court, the magistrate's court, has to have transcripts. So when we do an appeal, it's not like the matter is being heard afresh.
Yes.
So the judge is getting information from the previous court.
Yeah.
And then reading it in order to see whether the presiding officer did the right thing.
Yes.
And then decide whether or not there's grounds for appeal and all of those.
Correct.
Great. So now the judge, two different cases, two different accused, but the same presiding officer.
Okay.
The judge gets transcripts and then they're in Afrikaans.
Both of them.
Yes. The presiding...
Stop.
Yes.
Why were the transcripts necessary in other words, did the case actually happen, the original case, in Afrikaans?
Yes, that's where the problem is.
Got you.
So the judge was actually Afrikaans speaking. However,
yeah.
When he gave judgment, he gave judgment for both because...
The original judge.
Yes. No, not the original judge, the appeal judge.
Mm-hmm.
The appeal judge. He said, the issue is that in the lower courts, there seems to be a situation wherein presiding officers are creating laws of their own, whereas they're standing laws that they're supposed to adhere to. Remember, magistrates, unlike judges, are creatures of statute.
Absolutely.
And they are entitled to here and there try and make sure that they are flexible and
but
not
that's
too
not
rigid.
Their job.
But it's not
their
job.
They must just stick to
them. They are creatures of statute. Now, amongst the things that are binding to the presiding, to the magistrates, are that the medium of communication in court is English.
Ah. Even if all of you can understand each other, and we can all sit here as Basotho, from the judge to the magistrate,
yes,
to the appeal person, to whoever the state attorney is, and all of that.
Yes.
Nobody here must speak in that language.
That's correct.
Hmm.
Right? So now, in the lower court, the attorney for one of the accused, also an Afrikaans-speaking
so
man.
So if the accused was Mosotho, my lawyer is Mosotho, The state attorney is Mosotho.
Mm.
The judge is, and everybody here, the presiding officers, all are Basotho.
Mm.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
As the accused, I can ask for an interpreter.
The interpreter is always in court.
It has to be that
always.
Way.
Always.
So there's no excuse here.
None whatsoever.
There should have been an interpreter, even if we can all understand this person.
That's exactly what the judge said. Because now the attorney for one of the accused, when it was in the
Tell
match
us
court,
why that's important, Tabise.
That's what the judge is saying. In the attorney for the accused in the match court, ne, stood up when the accused when the accused wanted to speak in Afrikaans, giving with evidence, and then the presiding officer was engaging, like swearing him in and everything in Afrikaans, the attorney for that particular accused stood up and said, in as much as we all speak Afrikaans, the medium for court is English. May we continue in English? And then the presiding officer said, no one can speak English forever.
Okay, yanana.
And therefore, they continued and conducted
that
the trial.
English in FD.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. They continued in Afrikaans. So the greater part of that evidence is in Afrikaans.
Nice, hey?
So now the judge said, it is important for us to remember that there are 11 official languages in the country. 9. How many are there? 11, isn't it?
Now 12.
12, yes. There are now 12 official languages in the country. If each litigant was to litigate in their own language, we would not go anywhere.
Mm.
Because it would mean that papers, and it happens a lot actually, more than we would like to speak of, you would find that Afrikaans-speaking litigants draft their papers in Afrikaans. And then when you ask them to please write in English, then they tell them that there's 12 languages, Utlabashab. And then the black litigants then reply in whatever language they speak, Tswana, Tshivenda, whatever, and then submit it. Only then do they now revert back to English because now they have to now find a translator to translate the papers. So that is basically what the court is saying, that there is an established act from 2003 that says that the medium is English so that we can all hear each other. There are interpreters assigned to each and every court so that if the person is comfortable in speaking this particular language, we find somebody who speaks that language, who can translate it to be English so it can be heard. And the record can be all in one language. And then the judge took it a step further and said, net for dieting, you as the magistrate will ensure that the Afrikaans part of this transcribed record is in English on both
What does
cases.
That mean for the case itself?
It is a disaster for the accused persons, because now it means that for the part that is now in Afrikaans, it has to be translated into English verbatim so that it makes sense. And then it means that the appeal matter can't go back to any court in the high courts for it to be heard until the record is now in English. So it's now trampling on the rights of the accused to appeal.
It takes time.
Yes, it takes time. And already we already have issues with the shortage of judges.
And the backlog.
All of these things. So that is the problem of when in lower courts or in any courts really, when process is not followed. So I found it very interesting that most people, when they go to court, most of the time it's their first time, they don't know what the exact process is upon you first entering the court, what is expected of you, the swearing in, all of those things, what rights you have as a person appearing in court.
Can we talk about the quality of the interpreters though?
Ish. Yeah, no, it's something else.
Court interpreters have been interesting. I have heard, you've heard them.
Yes. I did a case maybe 3 years ago, not too long ago, wherein, fortunately for me, the witness for the state was a Mosotho from Lesotho. So I could understand exactly what he was saying. And there are certain words, when you say them in Sesotho, they mean something. And then when they're interpreted, they
mean something totally different.
You know? And our interpreter was a Tswana speaking
like
lady.
You could say Buhobe. Yeah. And Buhobe in Tswana and Sotho are two different things.
I remember my children actually asking when I was happy for them. And I'd get, Omobe. My son came in and said, Mommy, why ore ki mobi? Like, what's wrong with me? No, no, not ore, you're ugly, but you're good at what you're doing. You know what I mean? These are the things that I'm talking about, the little nuances that are in each language. I had to stop the trial and tell the magistrate, who was an Indian person, the interpretation is incorrect because what this person is saying is this, and the interpreter is not understanding at all. She's putting in what Setswana what it would probably mean in Setswana and saying it out, and yet Sesotho it means something completely
totally different.
So the court, I don't even know how that worked out. I asked, can I have permission to interpret, or can we stop the matter and find a proper Mosotho to interpret for this person? Yeah,
we've got a voice note coming through.
Hi, Pamela and Tabiseng. My matter, I just need an advice. My mom passed on, like, I think 2000, and she was married in community of property with my dad. And then my dad recently got married, and this woman kept on telling us that she's entitled of the house. And from the legal matters, how would you advise if, let's say, something had to go wrong, God forbid, that they get divorced or anything like that? Because now, after my mom's passing, is it the house, like the house, does it belong to just my dad or my dad and his kids? And does the kids get 50% and then the dad gets 50%? And then now that they're married in community of property, then maybe they share my dad's 50%? Or how does it really work?
Okay, first of all, the issue I'm picking up is that most likely mom's estate was not finalized. So we need to deal with that first. So upon mom dying, because they were married in community of property, by virtue of the marriage itself, 50% of that house automatically belonged to your dad.
So what you always say, in terms of saying, is that as uncomfortable as this may be,
yeah,
And as much as it's going to ruffle feathers and maybe your entire lives will be changed, you have to round up the estate.
You have to round up the estate.
And it may mean that this house has to be sold, unfortunately.
Yes.
The so-called family house may have to be sold.
Correct.
So that the estate is wound up.
Yeah.
The one, whoever passes away,
yes,
that estate is wound up. Because in this instant, what may have had to happen is that the house was supposed to be sold.
Probably.
Whether to the siblings or to an individual.
Yeah.
So that the man can sit with his 50% as cash, or he can buy their wife, the deceased's 50%, so that he can move on with his new spouse.
Yeah.
But he didn't inherit the old spouse's house. It's not how it's supposed to be.
Well,
unless if they had actually given it to him, right?
In terms of the marriage regime,
mm-hmm,
let's say the house is 100%. By virtue of the marriage, that house, 50%, even when they were married, belonged to the husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 50 belonged to mom.
Yes.
So upon mom's death, the 50% of the husband still remains with the husband.
That's correct.
So now we're dealing with the 50%
of the
mom.
Deceased. Yes.
So with that, he's already entitled to 50% of that 50%, which is 25%.
Mm.
It now puts him on 75% ownership of that house.
Mm.
Now, if mom died intestate, which it sounds like she did, then dad, over and above that extra 25%, he's also entitled to what we call a child's share, or 250,000 rand from the balance that's remaining from mom's estate, which is likely to mean that that house 100% will belong to him.
Mm.
And the children that were born of this marriage may get zero as a result of this.
Mm.
So if the estate is wound up, likely the house belongs 100% to dad.
The thing of the children, eh?
Yeah.
In the instance when the children are now adults, no longer dependents, what does that mean?
It doesn't really matter, to be quite honest.
But they must then agree.
No, they're not even involved. We have to deal first with the spouse. Once the spouse is sorted, then we look at the kids. The most important person in any estate is the spouse.
Mm.
That's the part that unfortunately people think, Hori, it's mean that we need to look at the kids and whatnot. The most important person in any estate is the spouse.
Mm.
We start there. Once that is sorted, then we look at other beneficiaries. If there's nothing left after the spouse has been sorted out, then tough. But what the children can do, if they're under the age of 18, they can have a claim, a maintenance claim against the estate. That is something completely different. But they are beneficiaries, but they don't automatically inherit as a result of being born out of that marriage. So if we wind up estate, yeah, mom, and it is interstate, and with everything else happening, and hubobona halaga dad owns the full 100%, then these kids have no say. And if dad is now married in community of property, then this woman is correct to say that she has a share in this house.
Yo. Okay, can we take a break?
Yeah.
All right, 086-000-00959. The voice notes can come through on 063-688-0959. Tabiseng Dubazana is here for all your legal questions. So, quick one, Tabiseng, just to wrap that particular question up, just another question that came through was the house. If the spouse did not live in it, the one who is a remaining spouse, that's still his property.
Correct. It's irrelevant.
Even if... okay.
Yeah.
So if the deceased was the one who was left in the house...
And she was still married?
Yes.
It's irrelevant.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the thing that we just need to be aware of. The spouse is always first priority. And then everybody else follows after that.
So her original question was, what was her question?
She was asking if the second wife has any rights
to
this property the way that she's claiming. So after the winding up of mom's estate and then the property is then transferred to dad's name, then yes, because it sounds like dad remarried in commuter property as well. So should dad, God forbid, die today, that woman has almost 100, if not literally 100% ownership of that property once you wind up the estate. Mm.
Okay, let's take this to a voice note.
I would like to find out, I wonder if you can help me. My mom registered for ARDP house in 1996. Since then, she has never received a call from them. But when you check the status now, it shows that the house was allocated for her at Plumridge under the group of the veterans. But it was cancelled because my mom, she's not a veteran. We've been going up and down to Alberton. They don't assist us. My mom now, she's very sick. She can't even walk. She's got a problem with the legs. And so there's no one who can assist us. And the sad part is that when my mom passed away now, without the allocation to her, it means the house will forfeit it. So who can assist us on that one? Can anyone help us? Where do we go from here so that they can fix it? Because since 1996, she's been waiting. And people have been allocated houses. She's really serious sick. She can't go to the Department of Housing anymore. So where can I get help?
Usually for houses, RDP, if it was allocated erroneously, they just need to fix it on the system. So the question is, did you go to deeds office to go and rectify the status? Because if she was given property as a result of being a veteran, which she wasn't, then they just needed to rectify her status and allocate the property. So the issue usually is within deeds office to find out, Torina, what's happening there. And if you're not getting any joy there, they're probably also looking at the fact that she probably has alternative accommodation. Therefore, she's not in trouble for getting that kind of property. Maybe she's living with you or anything of the sort, but that's usually deeds office. I think I would ask Mitz, and then I'll probably get back to you next week just to get a clearer answer.
Mm. Yeah. So the issue here for the family is that, folks, if one of you in the family or all of you in the family also want to apply for an RDP house, you must do that individually.
Yes.
Not rely, because even if that happens, let's just say, God forbid, your mom passes now after being allocated an RDP house, there's a process. There would be a process in how, as the family then,
yes,
you inherit that home.
Yeah.
So, you know, because we don't usually do these things legally, it doesn't mean that actually there shouldn't be a there is a process. Mm. So if there is a need in the family for an RDP home for yourselves, do that for yourselves.
Correct.
Make the applications for yourself so that you're not impacted by what happens to your mother.
Yes. Yes.
Let's take Anonymous on a call. Anonymous, good evening and welcome. Hello, Anonymous.
Evening, ladies. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I'm good, thanks. I just have a question because we are so confused. Is it possible for grand or great grandkids to appear in three separate title deeds?
Explain the details of the story.
Okay, the story is like this. My mom had a child out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
And then that when she got married, the parents said that child must be at home like Musalahai.
Mm.
And then that child was raised by my grandmother.
Okay, so, raised by the grandmother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, raised by the grandmother.
Mm.
So now my sister, my elder, I'll call her my sister because she was raised by my mother.
Yeah.
So she had her kids also staying at my grandmother's, which means now even her kids were born out of wedlock. You know, they went
through. Okay.
So, but further in the years, she got her own house.
Okay. That's your sister, ne?
That's my but okay. Now she's late. Yes, but now she's late.
Okay.
So now there's three issues there. My sister has a house. The kids are appearing in my sister's
house.
Title deed house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then from my grandmother's house.
What do you mean they appear in the title deed? What do you mean by that?
my names are on the title deed, yes?
On the title, because now my sister is late and they had to appoint their elder brother to be on top, and then they'll be in the title deed.
Okay.
So now, from my grandmother's house, because they were in the promise, in late in those years, they were using promise. So they were appearing in the promise from my grandmother's house. Because my sister was staying there and had them in that house.
Yeah.
Yes. So now, from my mom's house and my dad, we're using me and my dad. So now, because my mom is also late, so we appointed our elder sister, not her, the deceased sister, our elder sister who is alive, to be on top of the title deed. But now we are stuck fixing the title deed, because now it seems like we must even include the my late sister's kids in the title deed. So that's why I'm asking, they should appear in all these titles, because now from my great mother's house, they appear in the comet late on those years. From my mom's house, because my elder sister who passed on, who is their mother, they say they must be in this title deed, which is my mother's house also, and their mother's house also. So I don't understand
who
how
says they must be in the
who
title deed.
That?
The lawyer that you are trying to change my mom's title deed from her, because she's
now passed
least,
on now. Yeah.
No. That doesn't make sense to me. But firstly, just to answer you, when it comes to title deed, a title deed can have 30, 40 names. It doesn't have to be under one person. That's just something that is a misconception, that a title deed is under a husband or wife or one particular person. A title deed can have a number of names as long as the parties are in agreement that they're going to be sharing this property. So that's just out of the side. Now, are they saying that these kids have to be in this title deed by virtue of them winding up the estate of their mother?
No, not of their mother, but of my mother, who is their grandmother.
No. Your mother was married, correct?
Yes.
Dad is still alive?
No, both parents have passed on.
Okay, who passed first?
My dad.
Okay. Did you wind up dad's estate?
I'm not sure, because my dad passed away when the house in question was still at the municipal house in the late 70s.
Okay. And now you're trying to wind up mom's estate?
My mom's estate. Yes.
Okay. And obviously she died without a will.
Yes.
So if it's interstate, you start first with the children of the deceased, because there's no spouse anymore. So it would be you, it would be your sister who got raised mahaying with Gogo, right? Hello?
Okay.
I'm asking. It's you, it's your sister who got raised by Gogo back home, and who else?
No, we there's five of us, and then it's her who's deceased, it's six. Yes.
Okay, so there are five siblings and six siblings, and one is late. So of that, okay, I think I get what they're saying. But then why would they want the children to be also in their great-grandmother's house? I can understand in your mother's will, in your mother's property, because of virtue of being related. Right? Because your mother is the deceased mother as well.
Okay.
Yes. So by virtue of that, since the other sibling is gone, their children will now step into their shoes. So they would have right over the property, but it's not a must for the children to be on the title deed. So what you guys need to do as the siblings who are remaining is to decide how it is you agreed to deal with this property. You can either choose one of two things. You have a redistribution agreement wherein you guys agree that of the five of us, or six including the grandchildren that side, you say that I don't want really to have ownership or a share, so to speak, into the property. We can give it to one whom we know for a fact is needing this property, and then we can have what we call a usufruct on the property. So title deed will read, property belongs to Ntabiseng, but Phemelo le Modibedi, who are the siblings, have a usufruct over the property, which means for the rest of their life. So they can use the property for as long as they live, and it cannot be sold while these people are still alive, and include the minors in. They don't have to be on the title deed. Does that make sense?
We've lost her.
Oh.
We've lost her.
Okay.
I've got a voice note before we continue.
Nkile ka lwana le le khoane. Ha re lwana le le khoa lena a tshwanela gore a ye mediclinic. So ha tshwanela gore a tota stitchwe ke re tshwantsha to bua gore a no ke lwana le motho then, okay? Then ha go khutlela mo re le squad ka ofela re thola gore o butse case. Then ha ka ta bula case le nna ka tshwanela go bula case then happened to ra tswarua ene ho nkuwa di fingerprint case ra ba no ga di drop up kwase ntato ke na itse ngwe drop up pele is under heavy medication blah 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 that's why ke ona mentse ngwe ga ana ro ka na itse ntutsana di yeng so ho nkuwa di fingerprint so what I want to know go where is that case re di kadi de re le two but what happened ho nkuwa di fingerprint tsa ka mo king I register wa ya register wa king if I le teng how na me tong affect in any other way oh. In future
hi okay that like
it around but maybe you know yeah let me not say anything
okay, so when you get arrested, les IDs are what we call a warning statement which has your fingerprints in it. The fingerprint is dear to SAP 69s in Pretoria, Haoli Joburg, or wherever it is. And then the RCRC keeps them on record so that in future, should you be found committing any crime, you're already on the system. Doesn't mean who you are an offender. It just means who your we've fingerprints got,
we
are
watching you. It wow, means we are watching you.
Yeah. Mm. So now, when I want you need to make tendencies. Sure.
It means Roshevi.
So now what you need to make sure is that now that Lee withdrew the case, both sides layer, little checker at the individual police stations where you open the case, under the CAS number, the case number, and then let check your horina earring, because just now it is still saying pending. Mm. Now you're booking a flight to go fly somewhere and you can't because you have a pending matter. Mm. So you need to go and see first Horina Iring on the system. And if it says pending, request a copy of the docket where it says that the charges have been withdrawn. Mm-hmm. And then they update the system and then you'll be okay.
Okay, Abutuaka. Let's go back to Anonymous. Okay. Ne? I think you had a question for her.
Yes.
Anonymous, I think we've got you back. Where did we lose you? Where did we lose you?
They were still explaining to me about the title deed that it can have more than 40 years.
Okay, so now what I was saying is that you guys need to sign a redistribution agreement. I don't know why the attorney is not informing you of this. There is no real need for the grandchildren to be on the title deed, but they can be granted a usufruct, which is basically usage or usage of the property for their lifetime, should it be that it is necessary. But ownership can be given to one of you or all of you or whatever the case may be. It is not a must for the children to be on the title deed. There are other options. Alternatively, you guys can choose to buy out the minor children and give them what the share would be of the property. So between the six of you, if the property is worth 120,000 for argument's sake, then you divide 120,000 divided by six and you give them their share. But if you want them to still have some kind of home or access to a home, then you sign what we call a redistribution agreement. Inform your attorney on that so that they can draft you guys a redistribution agreement, and then we know what to do with the property, that it will belong to Ntabiseng, but the other family members have right of use of that property, which is a usufruct, and therefore Ntabiseng, because it goes into the title deed, that usufruct. So Ntabiseng cannot under any circumstances sell this property for as long as this usufruct still exists.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
ma'am.
Another
Thanks.
Last voice note.
Okay. Hi, Pimelo. Hi, Austin. Ki Thabang Mona. I mean, interesting topic as usual. You always give us the heads up as far as legal matters are concerned. And yeah, there's a lot that we are behind on. Quick question. On the question, yeah, the estate now. What if the property was not wind up? I think that's the term you used. What happens now when the remaining father passes? Does the woman who is currently married in property with the father keep everything, or what happens now?
I think so.
Yeah, no, we have to go back in time first. We have to wind up mom's estate, then wind up dad's, so that we can see how much this woman actually has over dad's estate. So what I would advise that person who sent us that voice note is qalang le wind up a estate ya mom who's now late, and then it will determine whether dad has full 100% over the property, which is likely the case. And if that's the case, then you know for a fact that when dad passes, this current wife most likely will have 100% over that property.
And the short answer is that yes, she has 100% of the state. And then what? And then it's unfortunately the way
it is. It's unfortunately the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I think everyone's trying to understand how to protect the family.
It's a will. That's the first thing. Do yourselves a favor.
Mari, you see, so here's the uncomfortable truth. Mungataba, which is the father, everybody's, I think, is unhappy about this father figure who has decided they are moving on and they're getting a wife, a spouse. If Mungataba is not interested in the will business, that's Mungataba's prerogative.
Exactly. There's nothing you can do.
As the children cannot do anything about all of this.
Yeah.
You just sit and watch.
Yeah.
It's his business.
And he can do whatever he wants with that property.
And then he can leave you with that woman.
Yes. What are you going to do?
I think people are stressed.
Yeah.
But you always bring us stress.
No.
When Anthony say, it's good information, but yeah, it's stressful. Jeez. See you next week.
Next week, my darling.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.